There's so many different levels in what was shared with us today from both the Bible and the Bhagavad Gita about our relationship with God, which is really everything in life. There's a beautiful prayer that is from Swamiji's Book of Affirmations that we read each week. I'm not really sure which one this is. It says, oh dear, there she goes. She knows exactly what it says, but she can't remember it. Amazing. Well, I forgot it. No, we're going to know what it is. Oh yes. Problems can't exist, Lord, when you are near. Give me the strength then to hold you ever in my heart. It's just such a simple equation, isn't it? Because if we all think about the circumstances of our lives, we realize that the circumstances are always there. And then even in the course of a day, those circumstances can seem overwhelming or merely factual. Or they can go from factual to overwhelming. Isn't that so? A situation that seems easy of resolution when we suddenly feel weak and helpless in some way or another, all of a sudden we're dissolved in tears, whereas a few hours later we can't even remember why we were crying. The point being that the circumstances are always neutral, as Master put it. Whether we feel them to be happy or sad depends on the state of our consciousness. And the closer we feel to the divine being with us, the more close we are to the center of where everything is happening as it ought to the center of our own power, to be divorced from the anxieties that cause us to think that problems are overwhelming. Whenever thou art near, problems dissolve. And so the one prayer that we want is to hold God strongly in our heart. Because if we have God strongly in our heart, everything else will follow. When my friend Linda was dying of cancer, it was the second time it had returned, but it metastasized all through her and into her brain, and she didn't have a very good chance. And we went with her to Europe to see Swami Kriyananda, who was out of the country, and because she didn't know if she would live long enough to see him again before he returned to the U.S. In fact, she did, but she didn't know. And she just went to Swami and with just open arms and open heart, just said to him, "What do I pray for?" You know, she had a family. What do I pray for? It's a question that I've often wondered too, when I haven't been diagnosed with anything that would say, that would give me a termination date on my life, except having been born, as they say, but not having knowing like this. But I always wonder, you know, what would I do in that moment? So she asked him very seriously. She wanted to be well because she had a family and children. She was not eager to leave. She did not feel she was finished. But at the same time, this is what God had sent her. So Swamiji's answer was very simple. Pray to be in the light. Because problems can't exist when thou art near. Give me the strength to hold thee always in my heart. Because if we're praying to be in the light, really nothing more much needs to be said, does it? Because from the position of light, everything else will be obvious to us. This is what we're saying when we say, thy will, not mine. What we're saying is that we want to do that which will move us upward into more expanded consciousness. Whether that keeps us in the body, whether that keeps us in the job, whether that keeps us in the home. You know, it's not always obvious from an external perspective which one of those will bring us closer to God. And in fact, the underlying request of all of those desires is because we want to have that feeling of uplifted consciousness, isn't it? Everything we do is to give us a sense of security, a sense of being loved, a sense of confidence as we move through the world. And we paste all these other needs on it, but that's the one need that we're looking for. So now, also what was talked about is the Lord's Prayer. Jesus teaching us, give us this day our daily bread, lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Swami didn't, in the reading today, he didn't give us the whole prayer, but that last line is so beautiful with scripture because you can hear it bazillions of times, and then all of a sudden you'll hear it. When Janice was singing so beautifully at the end of I have made thee pole star of thy life, though my sea is dark and my stars are gone, still I see the path through thy mercy. And she you all were here a minute ago, but you just heard her drag that one out, repeat that one. Still I see the path through thy mercy. And I kept hearing that word, mercy. Swamiji would often tell a joke that he liked when the man was brought in front of the judge and the judge says, how do you plea? And the criminal says, I plead for mercy, sir. I plead for mercy. That's what we're always praying for, isn't it? You know, because we have a giant suitcase full of reasons why somebody might want to condemn us. And if we are not being condemned from the outside, we're busy condemning ourselves from the inside. You know, there's unfortunately probably not one among us who says that there's nothing that we regret. There's not been a moment when, oh, I wished I could have answered, said, acted, done. We all carry that. And how are we ever going to resolve that? I pleads for mercy, sir. Even when the sea is dark, through thy mercy, because problems can't exist if thou art near. So then Swami asked the obvious question, also I was going to say about lead us not into temptation. Lead us not into temptation. I remember a period of time in my life when my brain was pretty scrambled, and there were a lot of I wants circulating around in very close proximity to the other part of me that wanted not to want. You know how complicated it gets. And I remember that my prayer every morning was, if you give me a chance, I'm going to do the wrong thing. And so please don't give me a chance. And it was most amusing for the rest of the day to watch me to try to outsmart God and God keep outsmarting me, because give me a chance and I'll do it. So it says, lead me not into temptation. Meaning what we were just saying to God, I don't know how strong I would be if you actually give me a choice to grab for what part of me wants rather than resist with what the other part of me wants. But don't test me. Deliver me from evil. You get a little package, you know, that was addressed to evil, and instead it gets taken over here, like Amazon, you know. Oops, wrong address, God. Problems can't exist if God is near. So the evil is coming toward us, but when we're holding on to the light, when we're praying to be in the light, then nothing can get through that. That's an absolutely impermeable barrier to, not to difficulty. But to true loss. We can lose a lot, a little bit, just like David was reading from Whispers, which was so good, you know. Just helped me to understand that it's for my amusement and my education. And then, but I love 3/4 of the way through the poem where he says, but every once in a while, give me a few days off. How about that, Lord? I know when Swamiji fired me from a job at which I was exceedingly incompetent, and it was a major failure. And I knew, in addition to relieving me of the responsibilities, he had a few things he wanted to say to me. But I was so glad to be relieved of the responsibility because it had been such a burden and it had been going on for a couple of years. He told me on Friday that he was switching my job with someone else. And I said, I know you have some things to say to me, sir, but could we talk on Monday? And I said, and I'll just spend a couple of days just being happy that I don't have to do this anymore. And so he agreed, and I just pretended that I'd gotten away with it, that I had just really messed up, but I wasn't going to have to face it. And then on Monday, he talked to me, and it was tough. But God is our friend. He's our playmate. Master is our friend. He's our playmate. You know, one of Master's beautiful poems is about Playmate, isn't it? Some of you remember it. It's at the end of, I presume it's at the end of Whispers, if you haven't seen it. And it's just how God plays hide and seek with us. And we suffer, and we think he's taking care of us, and we think we're abandoned. And then we find out that all the time he was just playing with us. So this brings us back to the central question of what our Bible and Gita is about today, which is, if the divine lives inside of us, and if Divine Mother knows our hearts better than we know ourselves, then why do we pray? Why do we have to talk? Why can't we just go about our business? Well, the difficulty is, and these are the divine mysteries that I have no answer for. Scripture can answer it as Scripture answers it. But it's the lila, it's the way it's set up. Now, I might think of it as a way like this. If you're training someone, if you're helping a child learn to do something, the child has to learn how to do it. You know, a child has to learn how to read. There was a child in our community many years ago, and very bright, but she had some dyslexia. And as a consequence, of course, learning to read was difficult for her. She has subsequently learned to read very well and went on to get a PhD from a prominent university, so she overcame all of that. But for a period of time, her mother was enlisting the aid of a number of us to just sit with her and help her read. And reading for me, I've always been exceedingly facile. I think I learned when I was about 4. Everybody in my family was reading, and so it just seemed like the thing that you do. I never remember learning. I just always remember knowing how. But this little girl, bright as she was, it was very, very difficult for her to learn to read. And it was so touching to sit with her, because she would try so hard to sound out the letters and all of that, was whatever was going on in her brain. It just made it very tricky, you know. And I would just sit with her and just kind of help her get through this. And mostly what I was doing there was just projecting the thought, you can do it. I know you can do it. I'm sure you can do it. And eventually, of course, she did. But that's how it is with us. We're sitting here, and it's, you know, learning to live correctly is like being very dyslexic and not really being able to understand, and having the letters actually, and this is what I'm told, the letters will actually shift in front of them. And, you know, with everybody's attention to these matters, I saw somewhere that someone has created an entire font, which makes it much easier for people with that brain change to see the letters more clearly. Isn't that self-evident? I mean, what a good idea. So you have a whole set of books where you can learn to read, where the text is better for you. But it's Divine Mother sitting with us while we very painfully sound out the principles. But we sound out the principles by hurling ourselves off cliffs and throwing ourselves against blank walls, and by, you know, tossing away all our opportunities, and then every once in a while just getting it right and just sailing through a couple of incarnations. I mean, it just goes on like this. But there's no way she can do it for us. Because how does that work? You can force people to behave properly. Nitai, who's one of the primary developers of our education for life system for children, in the very early years, before Swamiji had actually written his book, when Nitai was just trying to intuit it out of bits and pieces of things that Master had said, one of the remarks I remember him saying when he was talking to a group was, he said, when we're training the children, he said, we watch training the children in right behavior, right understanding, even academics, everything. He said, we watch for two things. We watched for mindless rebellion or mindless acquiescence. He said both are equally dangerous to the future of the child. And the problem is, you know, very few school systems pay attention to mindless acquiescence. If they can get you just to do it, then they're perfectly happy. They think you've succeeded. But he was aware of the fact that if the child didn't, him or herself, willingly embrace it, then it was just a matter of time before one way or another their natural tendency would explode out, or they would never actually come to their full potential. And so Divine Mother is not content with anything less than a complete understanding within ourselves and a conscious commitment of our own will to righteousness. And righteousness is really the same as happiness, but we just don't know that necessarily at the beginning. That right where there is dharma is where victory comes from. When we do those things which actually bring higher consciousness, then we finally get what we're seeking. But she can't spell it out for us. And it just if we've only behaved because we're afraid, if we're only behaved because we look around and this is how we can fit in, if we only behave because we've surrendered our will to someone who takes over for us and tells us what to do, then when the pressure is on, there's nothing behind it. There's no capacity to hold to the light because we've never actually decided that our happiness is in the light, you see? And so our prayers, we're not needing to explain it to God. We're needing to explain it to ourselves. And that's what happens when we try to open ourselves to the light, is we get to find out what we really feel and what we really want. I remember I had this very negative attitude toward a situation in my life, but it was one of those things where I love these. Oftentimes, the problem with the test that you're faced is that you actually are right, that other people actually are wrong, and that you are actually right, but you're still not going to get your way. Those are much more subtle tests, you know, because you're so justified. I mean, sometimes self-justification is a delusion. Sometimes self-justification is the way it is. But God is using other people's faults against your virtues to teach you something else. So I was caught in one of those where I genuinely believed, and you've got to believe me, I was right. But nobody was listening, and I was never going to get my way for a lot of very good reasons, quite apart from my being right. And so I was praying, you know, to love mine enemies, or self-styled, however you would put it. And all of a sudden, I just knew in my heart, I didn't want to. It was just as simple as that. I enjoyed being self-righteously upset. I mean, it was very pleasurable. I mean, isn't that so? Why do we keep going back to it? Why do we keep having arguments with people who aren't in the room? People we haven't even seen in years. Why are we still telling them off? You know? Because there's a certain satisfaction in it, isn't there? Yeah, we do. We get energy from it, and we get to reaffirm how mistreated we were and how smart I was and, you know, anything. Fill in the blanks. You can fill in your own blanks. So I was sitting there, you know, knowing that I needed to get over this and asking God to help release me when I realized my prayer was a lie. It was really just as simple as that. I was having more fun being upset than I could imagine having not being upset. So, of course, the prayer had to change. The prayer had to change, I want to get over this. You know, and that was an honest prayer. I don't want to get over this, but I want to get over this. And how would I know that? How would we ever know that? Unless we offer ourselves into that light. And so the Gita commentary, which is part of this whole section in the Gita, which is all about rituals and fire ceremony and priests and the prasad and just all this stuff, you just read it, you think, oh my God, do we all have to become pujaris and become Hindus here to be realized? Swami in his commentary goes at great length about it. But of course, all external ceremonies and sacrifices, and we ourselves do a fire ceremony at 9 o'clock every Sunday morning, it's symbolic. Sometimes if you put it out in a way that you can see it, you can understand what it is we're trying to do with our consciousness. Fire is the transforming power of spirit. And it's a magnificent image, and all the ways that it expresses to us help us to understand what that flow of energy is. But the real fire ceremony is offering our consciousness into the spiritual eye. And so when the Gita says those who don't make any sacrifices and don't take the fruit of sacrifice are not even happy in this world, meaning even material life doesn't work for them. But what that's saying is those who don't offer themselves into a higher vibration to have their nature uplifted. Nothing ever works out. It doesn't work out in this world. Now, it could work out in this world because you can build up good karma in one direction. It takes a little while for it all to catch up with you. That's why you often see bad people seeming rich and powerful and things like that, but what they're doing is they're just gradually working themselves down. Because whatever good karma brought them up to that point, if they're squandering it, they will eventually then lose it. This is why, dear friends, it takes us so long. You know, and we have to go up and down and up and down many times. In a very small way, Swamiji has often said, those of us who become yogis have had great material success and wealth in the past. Otherwise, we would still be pursuing it. And I don't mean it's pursuing a reasonable, comfortable living, but a passion for material success. And I was raised in a family that we were simple. We didn't have fine things. We had perfectly good things, but my parents were not materialistic, so they didn't invest in fine objects. And I was visiting a friend, and she had this really beautiful china teacup that I don't know where she had it. But she served me a cup of tea in it, and my life experience was such that it was really probably the first time in my life I had ever drunk tea out of such a fine china cup. And I still remember. I put it to my lips, and I could feel how smooth and delicate that cup was. And it was just like a sensation I'd never had. I remember savoring it, sort of just savoring the edge and savoring the tea as it came like that. And I put it down, and I said to Swamiji, oh, I see why people have things like this. Swami just looked at me, be careful, he said, just like that. You know, here it can come up again. You can't just say that you're safe. But this is what happens to us. But when we hold all of those thoughts and desires up to the light, and we make God our partner, he's our friend. And this is where Swami uses that beautiful phrase, I loved it, you don't have to try to persuade God. Persuade is a very interesting word, isn't it? And it's really a word worth contemplating, especially in the context of prayer. He said you don't have to badger him. You don't have to beat on the door, you know, like a deprived person trying to get somebody who doesn't love me to pay attention to me. I mean, that fundamentally is what blocks his ability to help us. That's being a dyslexic person and reversing the letters. We're supposed to understand, not supposed to understand. We need to understand in order to be free that we are already loved. And therefore, we want to offer ourselves. This is neither mindless rebellion nor mindless acquiescence. We want to offer ourselves. And when we discover that, oh, look, that isn't quite what I meant to say. That's not actually who I am. Let me tell you who I really am. You know, isn't it the most wonderful thing in the world to have someone in your life who listens? So many times I've heard people speak of a relationship and they'll use this phrase, so-and-so really gets me. And what that apparently means now, gets me used to mean gets me, likes, upsets me. But it also means they understand me. They really understand. And it's very difficult to find that in human life. We find people who can go a long distance. But to have someone who never misunderstands, that we don't have to try to persuade, now that's what the heart is longing for all the time. And the beauty of it is, we already have it. But we have to offer ourselves into it continually. Like any relationship, it thrives on selfless giving. And the more selflessly we give, the more it becomes obvious to us what we're holding back. And the more then we can apply ourselves to giving more. And then we say to Divine Mother, lead me not into temptation, but please deliver me from evil and show me the path through your mercy. Because God cannot exist. Problems cannot exist when God is near. Give me the strength always to hold you in my heart. Bless you.
its friend. It's in our heart. The songs of joy resound. You hear what echoes in the world around. Ring on a hill. Sounds lonely if you're sad. Free if you're free. Cheerful if you're glad. Cheerful if you're glad. Come with me. We'll chant of battles won, shots not of anger. Joy will be our God. Before the night, the veils of sorrow rent, feeling of freedom, all delusions end. All delusions end.